Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
51551 is the text, 087-032-3232 is the WhatsApp. My next guest truly stole the show in the recent House of Guinness, which I know from our listeners here, nearly everybody in Ireland watched that show after initially people frowning about it and we just got obsessed with it. She delivered a powerful turn as a proud Republican hero, Ellen Cochran, and a striking counterpoint to the rarefied world of the Guinness family at the centre of that blistering story. She's making, I'm very surprised about this, her stage debut in one of the most famous plays ever written. It is The Crucible, but actor Niamh McCormack, good afternoon, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. The Gaiety's in, The Crucible is in The Gaiety, and Charlene McKenna, who we'd hear recently from Peaky Blinders, another Stephen Knight show from the same universe as House of Guinness, is in it as well, is in The Crucible. So it's the first time you're working together?
First time we're working together. First time I met her was at rehearsals, I think, the week before Christmas, and she's such a gem. I can't wait to do this with her. It's really, really special.
She's a great Monaghan woman.
Oh yeah, good Monaghan woman. I've family in Monaghan, so we know it's like that connection. It's that crazy Irish connection.
Oh, the glow is warm for you here. Yeah. You're a dub though, aren't you?
I'm dub, yeah.
So where in Monaghan would the connection...
We're in Monaghan?
Yeah.
Oh God.
Monaghan in general.
Just in that Monaghan area.
They're family.
They're family. My family are in Monaghan.
You don't like to get specific, see. Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. Be careful.
And they know you in Dublin, don't they? Because your mum is a woman around town from her makeup brand for many years.
Yes, she
Before
had.
It was a huge thing.
Yeah, exactly. She was one of the first, I think, professional makeup shops in Ireland that specialised in HD makeup for camera. So I grew up in town, you could say, around that makeup shop, and I passed the Gaiety every day coming back from school.
So it was on Clarendon Street.
Clarendon Street, yeah.
Makeup Forever. Makeup Forever.
Yes.
So people know Anne.
Yeah, Annie Gribben. Good on Annie.
It's a great name as well, isn't
yeah,
it? It's
yeah.
It's a very kind of movie industry name.
Yeah.
Annie Gribben, I know her.
Here she is.
And so she's you obviously grew up with this, so.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up around makeup and the whole theatrics of it. And I think it definitely gave me a platform to want to express myself and delve into that. And my mum was always very supportive of that, which I was so thankful for, because acting isn't, you know, the easiest industry to get started in. It's frowned upon in some ways. So I was lucky to have that.
And you were the shy teenager in school. Had a tough enough time in school, I think, did you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was just misunderstood. I had undiagnosed ADHD, which is a massive thing now.
Really?
And I kind of went through school not knowing that. So I was looked on as like a problem child.
So the other girls thought you're the messer who's ruining it.
The other girls and the teachers too. It was all point at her. She's kind of dragging everyone down. But in a way, I think it kind of helped me become who I am now. I think I really flourished when I got to acting school then, and I realised, oh, it wasn't me.
This was just the creative streak.
Exactly.
That was hanging out in there.
Yeah. I was just always more, I think, creative than academic. And unfortunately, I think the schooling system doesn't really cater towards that.
No, maybe not. Yeah. But you're very young. This is all very recent to you. But you survived all of that, and you seem to have quite a sunny disposition about it.
Oh, thank you. Maybe just the sunshine shining today. Maybe that's why.
The pale, cold sun.
I know. At least it's not raining. I can do the cold, but I can't do the rain.
Kind of that nice, fresh happiness.
Exactly.
And then into The Crucible.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah, the happy play.
House of Guinness was such an explosive hit, wasn't it?
Mm.
I mean, that must have been so fun to be involved in from the get-go.
Oh my God, yeah. It was crazy. I think having the platform to tell the story about the Guinnesses. I didn't even know the story about the Guinnesses, what they did for Dublin.
I don't think a lot of us did.
Yeah. I'm glad that you say that, because I was a bit embarrassed about it. And even where we're rehearsing now is opposite the James's Gate Brewery.
Oh, is it? Were you
in the bank, it's called, which is the old Guinness Bank, where they used to pay their workers.
Yeah.
I just feel like I'm in history now. Honestly, it's incredible. So doing that show, I think... it was a pinch me moment. I've been such a big fan of Stephen Knight. I mean, Peaky Blinders was one of my favourite shows on Netflix for a really, really long time. It probably is. I mean, Cillian Murphy is one of my biggest inspirations.
Yeah.
And Stephen just writes such detailed, lived-in characters. And even though they're set in, periods that were hundreds of years ago, they still feel really modern.
Yeah.
And tailored to stories that need to be told today. So I was, over the moon.
He gave you an amazing role. He was obviously watching you over the years. But seriously, brilliant, wasn't it? Brilliant crack, feisty.
Yeah, I mean, as a woman, I think at the forefront of that cause during that time, it was a brave move from Stephen. And I think maybe 10 years ago, it wouldn't have been made. So I think Ellen represent so many women who have been written out of history and forgotten. And yeah. I'm just glad that people resonated with her and, you know, felt so strongly about the character the way I do. So it was
I mean, the brother, sad. God love him.
I loved my brother, Seamus. He feels like my brother in real life. We bonded so much over that. He's great. Such a great guy.
He's kind of the Egypt for anyone who doesn't know. And you're very calculated. The Ellen is very, she's very smart. Mm-hmm. And she's calculated in a good way. And obviously there's the complication of the relationship he has with himself.
Love. Such a complicated thing. Family. Yeah. Yeah. I think she just thought about changing the strategy about how to gain Irish freedom and a voice for her people. You have to watch the show to see what happens next.
The Fenian in you.
The Fenian in me. Yeah, exactly.
So you're now in your rehearsal space looking across at St. James's Gate and all the machinery there. Mm. But making House of Guinness, sadly, none of it in Ireland.
I know, unfortunately. The buildings are just very modern these days. I mean, weren't allowed to get access, of course, to the Guinness Brewery because it's such a tourist attraction. Yeah, we couldn't shut it down.
It's too busy.
Unfortunately. So we made it all and we filmed the Guinness Brewery that was in Liverpool in an old tobacco warehouse, one of the oldest. I think at the time it was like around the 1900s, it was the biggest building in Europe at that stage. Yeah. And it was just derelict. And we kind of went in there and turned it into the Guinness Brewery. And we filmed all the docks down in Liverpool. We were actually swapping sets with the Peaky Blinders movie during that
really?
Time, which was really cool. That's yeah. Amazing. Which was, I never got to see Cillian Murphy though, which was like, nah.
Did have but, under wraps,
it was really special. And then all the studio bits were in Manchester. So we were just kind of floating back and forth. But also, it's so Irish down there.
Well, Stephen Knight said this, that Liverpool looks like Dublin in the Victorian era.
Yeah, yeah.
With the buildings. A lot of the public buildings we see being used are Liverpool.
Yeah, yeah. And the red brick, old lived-in buildings that unfortunately they're not really here in Dublin anymore, or they're getting turned into, you know, hotels or apartments.
Or they have a glass kind of building next
yeah,
to it.
Which yeah, yeah, yeah. Or a crane or something in the background. So I think we got as close to Ireland as we could. I mean, there's so many Irish people in Liverpool and Irish descendants and so many great Irish bars, which we frequented, of course.
it kind of feels, I don't know if you had known Liverpool before. Did it feel like you were in a...
I didn't know Liverpool before.
Version.
It felt, I mean, we were just always around the Irish cast and we were always drinking Guinness. So it did feel quite Irish.
Always drinking Guinness, were you?
But so many people came from Ireland over to Liverpool because the dock was right across from Dublin, was it, or a cove or something. So it did feel like we were as close to Ireland as we could have gotten without physically being in Ireland.
Yeah, most weekends it's full of Irish people anyway.
Exactly.
With the props that you're drinking of, because you drink quite a bit of Guinness, especially when you meet up with Louis Partridge, the Guinness. Are you drinking real Guinness or did it put zeros?
Oh, no.
What
we
is
wouldn't
it?
Be allowed to drink real Guinness. Wouldn't get the day done. We were drinking 0.0, but honestly, the placebo, you'd feel like you were, you know,
really?
having a good jolly time, especially after your sixth or seventh pint. Because it tastes so similar to real Guinness.
Wouldn't have to drink that much, though, would you, for all those takes?
I had to. Or maybe I just chose to. I don't even remember. Maybe they're saying, oh, you don't have to. I was like, oh, you know what? I'm enjoying it.
It's heavy, isn't it?
It's heavy. But yeah. It tastes so similar. So is your brain is kind of thinking, oh, we're having pints.
I've had that before, yeah. You go out for a night and everyone else is drinking and you kind of join them.
Yeah.
But you're on zero.
Yeah, thing. It's that energy was bringing you in. And also I was wearing a corset and it was very tight. So it's,
oh,
you can't even
do
it. Yeah, it was everything. It was around the heat of the wig and it was in the middle of summer. So it was probably everything kind of adding to that.
It was a wig.
Yeah,
that was very convincing.
It was a great wig. I wish I could have kept it. And now I'm getting all these messages on Instagram of people saying, you look better as a ginger. And I'm like, what do you want me to do about that? I'm sorry. I'm not dyeing
Thank
my hair.
Thank you for the retrospective compliment. Like,
I don't know if that's a compliment. Yeah, yeah.
An insult
I'll take it
today.
As a compliment anyway.
Do.
Yeah.
Do. In the course of the wig, boiling out of it.
Yeah.
Full of zero Guinness.
And then we went into winter. So it was, and then it was
Then you loved it then.
Then I loved it, yeah.
Because of the wig and the striking red hair that Ellen has, are you getting recognised as much then?
In Ireland a few times, which has been lovely,
yeah.
Especially around Christmas. I was in O'Donoghue's and it happened a few times while drinking Guinness. It's kind of, you know,
that's what they put it two together, yeah.
But yeah, it's happened a few times and it's lovely, I think, when people recognise you and just feel connected to that character. I think that's what you strive for as an actor, is to resonate with people. So it's great. It's not crazy or anything. So
it's nice to play the kind of character we're all rooting for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hopefully rooting for.
Oh yes, of course. I forget the other perspectives.
Yeah. There's two perspectives, so, two sides to every story.
Anthony Boyle is in it, of course, as well. Mm-hmm. Which feels to me, he's been around and doing phenomenal work for so long, but this does feel like the one that's kind of really landed in what we call the monoculture now, that most people get to see. A lot of the shows were kind of Apple Plus prestige things, which were kind of, I've been raving about it for a long time, but he's apparently great crack and mad about Guinness.
Oh yeah. As we all are. That's why we were cast. There was a questionnaire before. We had to all drink Guinness. Now, Anto's great, and I knew him a little bit before we filmed together, and I think we've all just feel like some sort of a family doing this, you know, this acting job. It's a weird job at the same time. You know, we're all sitting in the studio dressed up in our costumes and we're looking at each other and we're like, this is our life. We got to tell this story now. So it's great. And yeah, I mean, Netflix is so wonderful to work with just because so many people have access to it as well.
Yeah.
And I think Guinness just did that great thing of a lot of different audiences came together and watched it. It wasn't just tailored towards one specific audience.
Yeah,
because
kind of you've been in The Witcher, which is a huge phenomenon, but it's like a kind of, in the fantasy world, it's for those, isn't it? And we're all fractured now into different departments.
Exactly.
It's kind of for everyone.
Yeah, a little bit of something for everyone in there, I think. So everyone probably related to a character in some different way.
Stephen Knight is hinting that it's coming back. I mean, the end, which we won't discuss. I don't know what you can say about it. We need it to come back.
Yeah.
What can you tell us?
I can't say anything because I don't even know. Stephen seems to know a lot more than we do. We're kind of kept on the back of it all. But
did you see his comments? Where he's kind of saying it's...
What
it's
did he say?
He says it's... We're enough of a hint that we've able to have headlines everywhere going, it's coming back.
That's coming back, yeah. Well, he was very confident about it, so I'll take it. Stephen's great. And I think I'd love to continue these stories. I think there's a lot more to be told. A lot more history to go into.
Oh, absolutely.
We're only getting to the Home Rule League and all that jazz. And independence was a long way away from that time. So I think there's a lot more to go into, and it would be great to be able to do that with these characters.
We have to say the accents are great.
Oh yeah.
James Norton, who's gone doing his press round, he was saying that he knew this was going to be viewed in Ireland and it had to go down well. And he worked hard. I thought he did an amazing job.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
But Louis Partridge, who plays, it's Edward, isn't it?
Mm.
Amazing. I had to look him up. I was so shocked to find that he was an English actor.
Yeah, and he probably had one of the hardest accents because it was, I think, that perfect mixture between English and Irish. And during that time, we don't have recordings of how they used to speak back then. We can imagine and hope that we're getting it right. But he did such an incredible job. And I think it just really, he needed to in that sense. He needed to. And he took that and he did such a brilliant job with it.
And you kind of twinged your accent a bit, didn't you?
Yeah, a little bit. Into that, you know, world and the working class of that time. Mm. And it wouldn't have been modern. So it was getting that perfect mixture between, you know, what the accent was before it became what it is today. So it was kind of scary, of course, because, you know, the Irish, we really don't hold back with comments.
We've been talking about Pierce Brosnan's accent this morning. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah. It's scary, I think, because Irish people are so critical, especially of history like this. So you're a little bit scared, but I think then you're just flowing with it and you're like, this is what the character I've created and this is how they sound. And everyone else can, you know, have their opinion.
And if we're focused on the accent, we're not really getting into the character at all.
Mm, exactly.
We're kind of missing the thing.
Exactly.
Is it true that you nearly missed House of Guinness? You were kind of committed elsewhere for a while and then you could have...
Yes, I was very close to getting something else. It was kind of between House of Guinness and another project, which I will not name. And
Is it reportedly Bridgerton?
Oh, that was something else.
That was something a few years ago.
Which I'm glad it didn't work out because then, of course, Guinness wouldn't have come. And I think that's the beautiful thing about this industry is that it all makes sense eventually. Sometimes it can feel like a massive loss and you're like, why is this happening to me?
Because you had a day or two, did you, where you're in Bridgerton celebrating and then what?
It was a few years ago. I was very, very close to getting a role in Bridgerton and then it didn't go my way. And I ended up getting a series called Everything Now on Netflix, which was my first real experience leading a show written by Ripley Parker. And I moved over to London with that show. I was 21 and it was fabulous. And then it was between House of Guinness and another show, which I will not name. I was really wanting it to be Guinness because I cared about Ellen as a character, and lo and behold, it happened, and it was like the best thing. for me.
There was such excitement when it was announced that, you know, the Peaky Blinders people, Anthony Boyle, all these people had signed on. This is going to be about Ireland, some bits of it in New York. And thank God it delivered.
Yeah, oh my God. So. And I'd seen it on an Instagram page called Lad Bible before I'd even gotten the audition. And I was like, oh, I need to be in that. That is class. Because I love Peaky Blinders and I love Stephen Knight's work. And then it just happened.
Did you chase it when you saw it was happening?
I did. I reached out to my agent and I remember doing the audition and I didn't hear back for a few months and I kept being like, hello, is that still around? Have they cast that? And but, you know, good things take time and you have to be able to put it to the back of your mind to continue with your life, but also hoping that it hasn't gone away. And then it was, I think, in May or June, I did two more meetings and then it was a week later that I'd gotten it and we were, I think, filming 2 weeks later.
I mean, go away.
Yeah, it happens very fast.
No time to think.
No time to think, which is good. I think if you think too much, you'll freak yourself out. And sometimes it's better to just go in. And
fascinating, the knife edge twists and turns that these careers land on and rely on.
Yeah, and the unpredictability and the rejection and all that. But I think you just have to have a good support system and a good healthy mind.
It sounds
to fill your time.
Sounds like you're grand. That.
Yeah, hopefully.
You start out in modelling.
Yes.
Very young.
Yes. Yeah, I was 14.
Wow.
But I credit modelling to, I think, how comfortable I am in front of a camera. I think it's so daunting when someone points a camera at you because they just see everything and there's nowhere to hide. And it's very vulnerable. And I think modelling at an early age, just I was just able to be and exist in front of a camera and not be self-conscious.
Yeah. Your mum, with her makeup background, would have been able to advise
you. Yeah, I mean,
you.
I started being a model for her makeup schools and, you know, having makeup done on me. Yeah. And that was kind of where it gradually became, you know, I signed with a modelling agency and I went to Milan when I was, I think, 16. It was a day after my 16th birthday.
That's mad.
So I feel like I have lived like a load of different lives,
really have,
which is hilarious.
When you went into the high end of the modelling industry and you're in Milan, did you find it a good industry to work in? What are your memories of it?
It was difficult. I think now, well, this is, oh God, nearly 10 years ago. And I think it's changed a lot more since then. It was quite toxic, especially, I think, as a young, naive girl. I was going to say woman, but I wouldn't even say I was a woman at that age. It can really mess with your sense of perception of who you are as a person. So I think I did 3 months in Milan and I came home and I said, I don't want to do that anymore.
Really?
But because I knew that I didn't want to do it as a full career, it was always acting. But it was stepping stones to, I think.
What was wrong in the job?
I think just, you know, they wanted you to be a clothes hanger, essentially, and, you know, take away your authenticity and what made you who you are to fit in a certain range of what they wanted. You know, they want a certain size or a certain, you know, look for these big brands for you to model their clothes. Now it's a lot more inclusive and body positive.
Yeah.
But back then it was
everything is wrong with you.
Yeah, yeah. I was told to fix my teeth and fix my nose and to lose weight, of course, and everything. And you believe it for a little bit. But as a young girl, I think it would be quite damaging to you.
You're a teenager at this stage.
Growing into myself still. I was just 16. So I think it took me a lot of time to come back from that. And then I did. And then you can look back and go, oh, that was wrong. Mm. And you're being told by, like, you know, grown men in the industry and you feel like you have to prove yourself. But now it's a lot different.
Extraordinary. You've come through a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and it might be easy where you are now to say, oh, that's, but it's not easy for a lot of people. And that was really tough.
It was tough, definitely.
It taught you that wasn't an industry for you.
That taught me, yes, yeah. But it took a while, you know, and I still did it and I still enjoyed it because it was a form of expression. And then now, I mean, it's full expression, which is beautiful with acting. I was just trying to, you know, find my way through life and I was hungry for it. I wanted to do it. I wanted to go to Milan and I wanted to have these experiences. And I'm grateful I did because I feel like it's made me the person I am today.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for everything I went through in school. I think that we should be grateful for things that have...
Isn't that kind of wild? It's such a truth that you almost have to go through the bad times to realise how good life can be.
Exactly. And then you're so grateful that you got through it. And some days you don't think you can and then you do and you go, oh, here I am today, so it's great.
And here you are. Look, we loved your lovely character and we're rooting for Ellen in House of Guinness. Tell us about Abigail in The Crucible.
Bless her. Bless her. Well, look, I know she is the villain of the story, but from an actor's point of view, you always have to, I think, understand your character and why they do what they do. And in this this time period, this Puritan religion, women just had no voice. I mean, they were invisible. Mm. And she has witnessed her parents being murdered by Indians, and she has absolutely no power in this society, and I think is terrified of losing control. And she does, I think, what anyone would do maybe at that stage, a traumatized person would do, of point the finger and take the blame. And she becomes kind of a martyr in this village of, I mean, the Salem witch trials. If you're not familiar with The Crucible, it is yes. centered around the Salem witch trials.
Calling out witches
and how accusation can become so much more important than actual fact. And the mass hysteria and religion kind of, you know, pushing that narrative and how dangerous it can be, I think, as a society. So there's a lot in there.
The kind of public shaming, mass hysteria, pointing out to this group of people are responsible for all our problems.
Yes.
It's kind of relevant in every era, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. As like an explanation for what was going wrong. And at that stage of life, they looked to religion for everything. Hmm. It wasn't actual fact. It was religion and the devil.
The devil himself.
The devil is alive in Salem.
Abigail was a real person. She was a child, I believe, wasn't she? And Arthur Miller turned her into an adult for
yes,
the play.
Yes, I think she was about 12.
Right.
So it's based on fact, loosely based. So there is a lot of characters that were alive and had to go through these awful events. But Arthur Miller obviously dramatised the play. And it's great. I mean, we did look a lot at the real facts of how these people would have lived mm-hmm. and how these young women would have lived. Because it really, at the centre of the story, it is about these women gaining a voice and people actually listening to them for the first time. And that's kind of what drives them to accuse, because mm-hmm. they're being listened to for the first time ever in their whole life.
They're either owned by a father or their husband
yeah.
or the community. And suddenly, if they get to point at someone, they feel this power.
They have the power.
They go mad on the power.
Yeah, they go mad on the power. And they're seen as like these divining rods of, you know, they can sense this evil, and these poor girls having to go through all these horrible things to point out the evil. So they're looked at like as angels mm. and they really take that and run with it, we could say.
You get all the iconic lines.
I know, which is quite scary at the same time, because
no,
it is such an iconic play. And my brother actually studied it last year. In the Leaving Cert, so I've been on to him about all the themes.
Is he able to give them to
oh,
you?
Oh yeah, he is. And I'm sure I'll have a lot of schools coming in and watching it for their Leaving Cert.
They will, yeah. Leaving Cert,
so that is exciting as well. Kind of.
So he was very excited about it.
Yeah, he was. He was very excited, and also like, oh God, you're playing Abigail of all the characters. Oh, yeah, I am. I am. She's misunderstood. You have to say, God.
The good thing about this is you're going to be home for quite some time, aren't you?
Yes, it's lovely to be back. It is. I've lived in London for 3.5 years. And I did a lot of growing up in London. I feel like I'm coming back a fully formed woman. But now able to be around family and in my homeland. It's lovely. It's really special.
You and definitely your brother are Gen Z. We've been discussing this morning.
Oh,
since
yeah.
you're going to be in Dublin, because the play opens on the 9th of February and runs in quite late into March.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be in Dublin. Will you go out? Are you going
after
home
the
in
show?
Your pajamas on your days off or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, on my days off, probably resting. Yeah. I want to walk in nature and really get into that Irishness.
Yeah, you're leaving the house.
Yeah, if I leave the house.
It turns out they're all in their pajamas from the afternoon.
Yeah. I agree. I do put my pajamas. Amazon as soon as I get home.
This is all of you, all the 20s somethings.
Yeah. It's the new way.
Just early nights.
Yeah, early nights. Have a full 9 hours.
So you feel like you're on stage, you're working very late.
Very late, yeah.
There'll be no pints afterwards.
I know, there will be.
Yeah,
after a show like that, you need a little bit of something at the end of it.
Especially if you're shouting about the devil.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen, we're looking forward to it. Thank you so much for the chat. I really enjoyed it, Niamh McCormack. And The Crucible is at the Gaiety Theatre from Monday the 9th of February until roughly the end of March. Tickets are on sale now and they'll fly out the door. Have a lovely weekend.
Thank you so much.